Welcome to the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. 7 months after the controversial departure of Evo Morales, hope for a smooth transition of power under the interim government in Bolivia is fading.
Should every government put in jail the representatives of the former government? That's what Morales did. And now we're repeating that cycle. So it's a vicious cycle. How can we move out of that and begin to construct a democracy that is more respectful?
Everybody in Latin America seems to have an opinion about Bolivia. What happened last November? Was it a resignation or a coup? Was Evo Morales one of the most successful leaders of his generation? Or was he a dictator in the making? Was he both? The interim president who took his place, Jeanine Añez, is she an authoritarian figure herself? These are questions that tend to arouse a lot of passion on both right and left around the region. The irony is that very, very few people out there know Bolivia well. It's a country that few have actually visited. It's incredibly complex. Lots of passion, not a lot of information. Today, we'll try to fix that. And we have really the best guest I can think of to help us do that. I'm joined by Raul Peñaranda, the director of the Bolivian news portal Brújula Digital. Raul's work as a journalist has earned him the coveted Maria Moores Cabot Prize and a Nieman Fellowship at Harvard University. Raul, thank you so much for being here.
Brian, it's great to talk to you. And as you said, it is true. Many people talk about Bolivia in these times, but there is actually few information about.
Well, so let's see if we can fix that over the next 25 minutes or so. But, you know, before we get into the politics, I just wanted to ask you, you know, you're on the ground there in La Paz. What's it like right now? I mean, I imagine that it must be such a strange situation with everybody in a, you know, in a pretty severe lockdown by world standards, really. I mean, the restrictions are very tight. It's this period where, you know, what was supposed to be an interim president, elections got delayed. She is now a candidate. I mean, what's the mood right now, in as much as you can, you know, testify to that, given the fact that everybody's locked up inside?
Exactly. We have this, first of all, this very strict lockdown where almost all public transportation and private transportation is prohibited. You have to have permit. This next weekend, is going to be prohibited to walk. So this is the way that the authorities try to have the virus under control. But it is true that Bolivia has one of the most strict lockdowns in the region. And then the situation is very unusual because we had to have elections in May first. Then they changed the law to August, then to September. And now the president has asked the Congress to change the date again to have elections in September or October. So we don't have any certainty about the political situation. And also the health situation, even though with this very strict lockdown, is beginning to start to lose control. We had some cases of people dying on the streets in the city of Cochabamba in the center of the country. We also have had many difficulties in hospitals that are actually collapsed in the last days. So we don't have a very good situation here.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. And that's consistent with what's happening in a lot of other countries that also had strict measures, right? Peru, Chile, others that had these strict measures in place and may have been able to delay the onset of the virus, but the numbers are spreading. And certainly, we all have our fingers crossed for Bolivia and for Latin America in general. So let me get into now some of the passion topics, the hot button points that have inspired so much debate. And I want to start with something that was recently in the international press. There have been studies published recently by political scientists here in the United States that suggested that the statistical analysis done late last year by the OAS, the Organization of American States, was itself flawed. And, you know, this has reignited a debate outside of Bolivia about the sequence of events that led to Evo Morales' departure. Understandably so, because all of us who remember that period know that that OAS report initially, you know, it contributed a lot to the sequence of events that led to Morales's departure. How much impact have those studies and the lingering questions about the OAS, how much attention are people paying to that in Bolivia? What's your own opinion? Or has the general population kind of moved on?
No. We have very clear ideas in Bolivia, and no one seems to change the former ideas. So if you think that the Morales government committed electoral fraud, maybe all those new reports will have real and small effect. And in the other side, the people that think that it was a coup and there was no fraud, the same thing. So this is very annoying, because we are like stuck in our own positions, and new data apparently are not changing the previous opinions that we had. Anyway, my take is that we had the vote counting suspended for 24 hours. And that was very unusual, and that sparked the protest in the country. The counting was suspended after 83% of the votes were tallied. The difference between former President Morales and Mr. Mesa, who was second, was 7% with that 83% of the votes counted. But when the process resumed 24 hours later, the difference in the 17% of the votes remaining jumped to 28%. That was to allow Morales to win the elections with a little bit more than 10% of difference to avoid the second round. No one can explain why that happened, and many people from the former government don't want to address that.
What I'm hearing from you is that even if the OAS report was flawed, it sure looks like there was fraud in that election anyway.
Exactly. And now those reports or studies that are statistical, as you said, they did not do a field investigation or research, right? It's only mathematics. But the OAS did that field research. And for example, in many polling stations, Morales won 100% of the vote. This could be possible as an exception, but when that happens in a recurring way, produces doubts, right? Also, the OAS proved that many voting records had the same handwriting. You know that in Bolivia and some other countries, the jurors of the elections are the normal citizens, and they had to fill a form with the votes, and suddenly tens of those forms were with the same handwriting. Things like that, or many polling stations that were initially annulled due to several irregularities and had to rerun a vote 2 weeks later. So all these irregularities make us think, this is my personal opinion, that yes, there was a fraud, or at least irregularities that probably made Morales won just a handful of votes, but there was enough to avoid the second round.
But this is why, Raul, you know, the Bolivia story, at least seen from the outside, just is so complex, because what you say is true, right? And all of us observed at the time the appearance of fraud. At the same time, it was true that the OAS report was absolutely fundamental in creating the momentum that led Evo Morales into exile, right? Via either coup or departure or ouster or whatever your preferred language is. So, yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason this has been such a, at times, bewildering story to follow, at least for some of us, is because, you know, it's complex.
Exactly. But maybe we need to go a little bit earlier. Morales lost a referendum in 2016. The referendum was called by the government to ask the people if there was a possibility of changing the constitution to allow him to go for a fourth term. Even the third term was not accepted in the constitution that he approved in his term, only allowed two terms. But he called his friends at the constitutional court and they allowed a third one. Okay. And then he called for this referendum to go to a fourth term and he loses. Right. And then he calls his friends of the tribunal again to ask them to change the popular vote that had voted against the change of the constitution. And these tribunals said that he had the human right to participate. So that's an important thing before the elections. There was a vote, a popular vote, that didn't want to change the constitution to allow him to run for a fourth term. And then, before the report of the OAS that you're mentioning, we had already like 20 days of huge protests in many Bolivian cities before the resignation of Morales. So, of course, the OAS report was important, but that was after 20 days of protests. No one would have thought before that in Bolivia, with such a popular president that Morales was, we could have that kind of massive protests in the country. So I think that the fact that those protests were also held in many, many cities, at least in the 9 capitals of our provinces. In our history, generally, the protests were only in La Paz or maybe in some other big cities, but not in all of the capitals of the country. So I think that also pushed Morales out. Of course, the OAS, the report was very important, but we had 3 weeks of protest before that.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, hearing you redescribe those events that led up to the election, it reminds me that, you know, certainly what influenced my point of view watching all those events unfold was the whole experience in Venezuela over the last 10 years or longer, the way we watched Chavez and then Maduro perpetuate their time in power. You see what Morales did. You see, you know, the apparent efforts to fix an election in a way that would allow him to stay for a fourth term. And, you know, at some point it becomes impossible to get a leader like that to leave. So, yeah, I mean, again, just an incredibly complex story. I feel like we could probably spend, you know, the next hour or so dissecting what happened in 2019, but let's move, if we can, into 2020. The elephant in the room, you might say, is the presidency of Jeanine Áñez. She took office in November with the promise to hold new elections and bring Bolivia out of its crisis. But as you said, here we are, it's June 2020, and the date of the election is still uncertain. Now, obviously, the pandemic has a lot to do with that, but Áñez has done things to raise suspicions about her own plans. She had originally vowed not to be a candidate. Now she is. She has also, in the minds of many, gone well beyond the role of what an interim president should do in terms of reorganizing Bolivia's diplomatic stances, as well as her investigations into Morales' associates. How would you describe, Raúl, her performance so far in terms of this polarization that you described? Has she contributed to that or helped soften it?
No, she contributed to the polarization. We were very optimistic at the beginning because finally Morales was out and we could have new elections very soon and try to rebuild our democracy. But suddenly, because of the pandemic, but also because of some of the decisions of President Áñez, we are 7 months later with no date for the elections and many problems. Finally, today she said that she wanted the elections to be held in October or November, finally. But all of these last months, she didn't want to say anything. She didn't use her, at the beginning, her popularity and now her post. And so she was playing to not to say anything in an apparent intention to really avoid the elections and maybe stay in power in a way that could be illegal with no end in sight, because she started with a big popularity, but then with many problems, corruption that we've had in the last months, and also this, of course, the problems that we had with our health system that is very, very weak. Her popularity is down. So when that happened, she didn't want to go to elections. So that's really something that should worry us, because now we have a president that is behaving in a similar way of President Morales. She only needed to stay to call for new elections. But now we have a law approved by Congress that she doesn't want to sign that says that the elections have to be in September 6th. So now we don't know what is really going to happen, if the Congress can sign that law if she doesn't want, or if some kind of conversation, dialogue, or negotiation can be between the government and Congress, which is dominated by the MAS party, the party of President Morales. He has two-thirds of the votes in Congress, really a huge majority.
Yeah, this doesn't sound good. You know, I mean, for those of us who really, you know, believe in democracy and democratic institutions, you know, what you want to see in all countries is orderly transitions of power. And what you're describing to me is someone who at least seems like she might be willing to, you know, use the pandemic as an excuse to perpetuate herself in power.
Exactly. Or at least to wait for a better moment to call for new elections, right? To maybe recover her popularity. But all those things can't happen. I mean, we need some certainty to have a date, right? But it's also true that part of society is really, really afraid of going to vote under these circumstances.
So who are Añez's supporters? Tell me, within Bolivian society, who is on her side? And by the way, her numbers, as you said, her popularity was quite high. It was at 69% fairly recently. Now it's down to 46%, according to Ipsos. This follows some of these claims of corruption after the health minister imported incompatible respirators at really inflated prices. She also made some moves to decrease government transparency, including the need to disclose government contracts during a public emergency. All of these things seem to have taken a toll on her popularity. But it's still, you know, 46% in the world today, it's not that low. It's certainly higher than Trump. It's higher than Bolsonaro. I mean, who are her supporters? Is it just the anti-Evo, anti-Mas crowd, or is it broader than that?
Okay, yes, she might have 46% of support, but when you ask the next question, would you vote for her? That's much lower than 20. We have very restrictive laws to publish a popular poll. So those polls that you're citing are quote-unquote unofficial. But she has less than 20% of vote intention. So yes, anti-Morales crowd and maybe kind of a far-right positions. You know that she's very religious. She's against abortion. She's against gay rights to get married. And also the rhetoric of her government is really worrying. Her minister of interior government, Mr. Murillo, yesterday he said Evo Morales is a terrorist. All the mass followers are terrorists or drug dealers. So that is not helping, because Morales has at least 40%, or the mass party at least 40% of support. So I don't think you should treat that big bunch of people in that way. That is not helping to get a better scenario right now.
Can you walk us through the rest of kind of where the polling stands, what it suggests about, you know, if there is an election in September or October, who besides Añez is in the lead?
Yes. First of all, the candidate of the MAS party is Luis Arce, the former Minister of Economics. In some polls, he has more than 30% of vote intention. Then there is Añez and also Mr. Mesa, that was the opponent of Morales last year. Apparently, Añez is going down and Mesa going up. But the thing is this, if a candidate gets 40% of the vote and a 10-point gap related to the second candidate, is president. And Arce of the MAS party is not far away from that, I think. But we don't have official polls, so this is very difficult. But if he gets less than 40% or the gap is less than 10%, maybe we would go to a second round. And in the second round, we'll win any of the candidates that opposes the MAS party. So if Añez gets in a second place or Mesa gets in second place, probably is going to be the next president.
It's basically the same dynamic as the 2019 election then, right?
Same thing. If Morales didn't win for more than 10 points, Mesa would had won. That is what we think. And now we are in a very similar situation. Of course, Morales was very popular, was the leader. Now he has his minister running, but he's not doing bad at all. He might be close to 40%, and the others two are around 20. So that 10% gap could happen. The thing is this, any president is going to need to forge an alliance in Congress, and this is going to be very difficult, because now the polarization is not only MAS and anti-MAS, but also Añez and Mesa. So at the end, I think that they could do some kind of alliance in the future in Congress. The problem would be more with Arce from the MAS party, because no one is going to try to have an alliance with him. So if he's president, he's not going to have majority in Congress, and that's a very important topic.
We haven't really spoken about Evo himself. He is now in exile still. He is in Argentina. He's still, you know, very vocal. He is, by the way, parenthetically, one of the best users of Twitter, I feel like, I've seen of any Latin American politician. I mean, he's very effective there. You know, what do you expect his role will be in this election? Do you think he's going to, I mean, is there room for a comeback one day? What is his role likely to be in the next couple of months?
Interesting. Look, now he's the campaign chief, jefe de campaña. He's running the MAS campaign from Argentina. So he's very influential in his party and the rest of the political system. But he cannot return because he's accused and he could go to jail. But I'm sure that if the tide changes, he can come back, maybe not now, but in some years. And he's going to be an important leader. And he could be president again in the future. Right now, he's a very divisive figure. I mean, you love him or you hate him, but he is popular.
I want to get philosophical here for a second as we come to a conclusion. You know, Bolivia, it's a magical place. And I've been many times over the years. I've been to La Paz. I've been in the border region of Brazil and Bolivia. I even on one amazing trip as a tourist, I went from La Paz and crossed Lake Titicaca into Peru and continued my way on to Cusco. But most of my visits have been there as a journalist and now as a political analyst here. And you know, it's such a difficult place in many ways for me to comprehend, because most of my experience in Latin America has been with, you know, living in Sao Paulo and Buenos Aires, two very different places. It's a place that had achieved a pretty, you know, went on a really good run. Whatever you think of what Morales did at the end, you know, those 13 years were a period that saw living standards improve dramatically for a lot of people. And it was also a period that was unusual in Bolivia's history because of the political stability. There were periods in the 20th century where Bolivia averaged basically one leader per year, right, because of coups and other issues that interrupted presidential terms. And I guess my question is, Raul, do you think we're moving now into another phase of instability now that, and it's not just a question of Evo being out, it's a question of the commodities boom being over everywhere in Latin America, and we see in places like Brazil and Argentina sort of old patterns of instability returning. You've described here on this podcast a lot of polarization. I mean, is there a reason to be optimistic about what might come next, or do you think we're sort of returning to old habits everywhere in the year 2020?
I think that we should be, that this is sad to say, but not optimistic. You are right that Morales in these 14 years of government provide Bolivia with stability and also with economic growth, and also with many symbolic aspects that made the indigenous population better off, not necessarily with increasing their money in the pocket, but also some symbolic things that they were part of the country. And you know that Bolivia has a majority of indigenous population, or at least 50%. So Morales had a very important leadership in these fields, but also in the economic field. He was also lucky to have those very, very high prices, especially oil. But our economy is going to decrease by 6%, said the World Bank the other day, 5.9% in this year, after growing between 4 or 5% in the former years. So can you imagine to have our economy decrease in 6% and maybe decrease the next year again in 3%? Oil prices are very low, and that's our main export. So we're going to have in the future many social problems, economic difficulties. And so I'm not optimistic at all about what will happen with the country.
What would it take, just as a final question, Raul? I mean, if you had kind of a magic wand and you could do one thing and to put Bolivia kind of back on a stable path. I mean, it's a country that, like a lot of Latin America, but maybe even more so in some respects, you know, so many divisions, so much inequality, you know, the divide between Santa Cruz and La Paz and, you know, just seems like such a difficult issue to solve. I mean, what just as somebody who's lived there for a very long time, what would fix it in your view?
I think that we need a national pact. Many intellectuals, academics, and also politicians are asking the president to make this deal, to call the opposition, even the mass party representatives, to decide some economic policies, for example, and also maybe to really make sure that the due process is going to be respected towards all these trials and accusations that are made against the Morales supporters. I think that would help. And also change the rhetoric that I mentioned before earlier. We cannot call everyone that is in the opposition or our adversary. We should not call everyone a terrorist and a drug dealer and all these things that this government is using as normal terms to refer to the opposition. So really, like, go down and try to make a minimum pact of what to do in the future in two things. As I said, the economic policies, how to confront a situation that's going to be very, very hard in the future, and also the politics. Should every government put in jail the representatives of the former government? That's what Morales did. And now we're repeating that cycle. So it's a vicious cycle. How can we move out of that and begin to construct a democracy that is more respectful? Of course, all of this is very easy to say and very hard to do. That would be a solution.
Well, Raul, we'll all be hoping for the best and hoping that you stay safe and take care. And thank you so much for being with us on the America's Quarterly podcast.
Thank you very much, Brian. It was a pleasure for me to speak about the thing that I care most, my home country.
Thanks for listening to the America's Quarterly podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review, give us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly podcast is produced by Brendan O'Boyle and Katie Hopkins. America's Quarterly is an independent, not-for-profit publication of America's Society and the Council of the Americas. This has been Brian Winter. Thanks for joining us.